This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're tuned in to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance right here on BFM 89.9. I am Tan Chung Han. With me, Roshan Kanesan. And for today's episode, we warmly welcome Fazrul Farooq, financial planner with IMX Financial. Good morning, Fazrul.
Good morning, Han.
All right, now, first of all, yesterday on BFM Video, while they released the first episode of their Roommate series, that's R-U-M-I-T, Roommate series, that show looks to tackle the complications around personal finance that come from adulting, all right? Now, one of the things you addressed was perhaps the levels of financial literacy among Malaysians. Give us a greater sense about the levels of financial literacy that you're seeing out there in the marketplace.
Well, Han, I mean, financial literacy in Malaysia is gaining a little bit more traction, I mean, with a bit more awareness that's being put out there. But I think we're still far behind where we're supposed to be. Yeah, I mean, looking at the statistics that was published sometime last year in terms of debt levels, yeah, bankruptcies that was announced on the age group, yeah, between 26 to 34. Yeah, that's a bit alarming. Yeah, with sufficient financial literacy, I think these are ways that we can avoid those kind of situations.
And what do you think is the one key message that they're missing out there?
Key message is, I wouldn't say it's just one, but right. I guess spending beyond means, that could be one of the culprit in terms of getting to that levels of debt.
Fazrul, so the big part of that video was talking about retirement planning. And, you know, retirement planning, saving up for retirement, it's such an ambiguous term. It's such an ambiguous target, right? So are there any specific criteria or benchmark or maybe even a formula that we can use to sort of make it more realistic, more specific?
Now, that's a very good question, Roshan. I mean, you're right. It's a big topic and sometimes it's left a little bit vague. More often than not, I normally advise people that I get in touch with to specify or to quantify an amount is essential. Yeah, I mean, investing blindly, saving blindly could also provide, you know, results that are not quite close to what you need. Yeah. So I believe the first step to retirement planning is about being aware on how much you need come that particular age. That will then bring you down to what are ways to get into, I mean, to eventually accumulate towards their retirement goal.
Okay, because with the Roommate video series, that's targeted at millennials, right? So this is a projection that is 30, 40, 50 years down the line. So how do you even get to that number?
Very good question, Han. I mean, you're right. 20, 30 years is a long time, right? Now, the best way that I normally advise my clients is that just take a look at your current expenses for now. Yeah, because it's difficult to gauge how much you would need come the retirement age. The best thing that you can take a look at right now is your current expenses. And no doubt, some expenses will go down by the time you retire. But likewise, some expenses will come up as well. So the normal planning that we can take for someone who's in his 20s or 30s is to just assume, to just use your current expenses for now, and then that can be inflation adjusted towards retirement.
Yeah, right. Because once you retire, a lot of things are taken off your plate. There are no taxes. Hopefully, you don't have debt at that point. Yeah. And you don't pay EPF contributions then, which then brings me to EPF, right? Yeah. Is it enough for retirement?
I'm going to pick on an old statistic. I mean, old as in 2013. Not that old, but, you know, not that new either. I think what was published by EPF is that the average savings of a 54-year-old active member at 2013 was in the range of about 160,000. Yeah? So that should give you an idea that, I mean, even putting this number, it still doesn't paint you a picture on whether it's enough or not, right? Just to give you an example, 35-year-old spending probably about 3,000 ringgit a month with an effective inflation of about 3.5%, you easily need double the amount by the time you hit retirement age. To have that in order, you would need at least about 1.2 mil in place when you hit the retirement age. So seeing this disparity between 160 grand over what you might need of 1.2 million. So I think that should pretty much give you an answer whether it's going to be enough or not.
So again, the idea of just saving for retirement, that's no longer going to cut it, especially for those millennials right now, right?
I would agree with that, yes.
Right. So I'm getting this message here that the idea is to just start. And I'm guessing that's to take advantage of compounding interest over time, right? Because the earlier you start, the more it compounds over time. Let's break it down. What does compounding interest mean, first and foremost?
Simply put, at the end of the day, compounding interest, in a very layman's term, is something wherein, you know, you make a return or you make an interest income, and that's reinvested back. That's the compounding effect. That, over a period of time, has a leveraging effect in terms of, you know, starting early, keeping it going, and etc. So the end amount at the end of the day is a lot more than just putting an absolute amount up front.
Right. So an example would be the EPF, right? The dividends that are declared every year. We don't get to take it out. It's reinvested into the EPF's various assets, right?
Precisely.
Yeah, okay. While we consider, say, the compounding interest, what is the relationship between that and inflation then?
Now, that's interesting. I mean, that's the way you put it. I mean, I think we can... The way I can probably relate the two is with time. Yeah, there's this thing that I use when I speak to my clients. It's called the rule of 72. You might have heard of it. Yeah, it tells you how long it takes for your money to double up. Yeah, given a certain interest rate or dividend rate. So in most cases, I ask my clients, putting your money into FD, you get an average rate of 3-4% today. Yeah, so applying rule of 72 will tell you that it takes 24 years. For your money to double up. 100K, put it into something that grows at an average rate of 3%, for calculation's sake, will double up over a span of 24 years. Yeah? Take a little bit more risk. Yeah? Take a little bit more risk into something that grows at an average rate of 7-8%. I'm going to take 8 because, you know, you can divide that with 72 easily. 72 divided by 8, you get 9 years. It's the same amount of money doubling up over a period of 9 years. 9 is a lot better than 24 years. But my key message here is this. Hey, it's still 9 years, right? How many 9-year cycles do you have before you hit the retirement age? So, I mean, time is of essence. You need to leverage on time that you have right now into something that goes in on a compounding basis.
And I think that's the exact line that you use in the video series as well, Roommate series. You know, how many 9-year cycles do you have ahead of you? I think that's a great benchmark to, you know, use when it comes to gauging whether or not we are on track when it comes to our retirement goals.
Yeah, you know, it gives a bit more structure, right? Mm. Because retirement savings can be such an ambiguous, vague thing. And, you know, when you add in things like compounding interest and inflation, it gets complicated and intimidating.
Fazrul, earlier you talked about investing more, right? Because that will see greater returns over, be it 9 years, 30 years from now, right? But what about investing less? Because look, let's face it, right? With millennials, we are crunched for cash. Disposable income is very, very scarce, much less trying to put aside money for savings, right? And recently, the EPF has also reduced the minimum that you invest in the EPF. Is that an option that we should realistically consider? Because on one hand, Roshan says invest now, but then it's got to be sizable enough at the same time, right? How do you balance immediacy versus volume?
I guess this is where the concept of delayed gratification comes in first. I mean, the whole idea of delayed gratification is paying yourself first. Yeah, so money is essentially still there for you. Yeah, it's just that you choose to spend it much later. Yeah, you don't do this 20, 30 years down the road. You know, you might be in a situation where you're forced to work even during your retirement years. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with working during your retirement years, but you want it to be by choice, not because you have to. So at the end of the day, I mean, following the rule of income minus expenses equals savings is something I think that's a bit outdated. What needs to be done today is, at the end of the day, is income minus savings equals expense. Easier said than done, yeah? But I guess this is when managing your lifestyle, your expenses, is something that you need to review over time.
All right. We're speaking to Fazrul Farooq, financial planner with IMX Financial. Coming up after the break, we'll continue to explore the idea of personal finance for millennials and the complications around adulting. Stay tuned to Ringgit and Sense, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on Ringin' and Sense on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Chung Han. With me, Roshan Kanisan and Fazrul Farooq, financial planner with IMX Financial. Fazrul, at the end of the first half, you spoke about what you gave us this really apt formula here, income minus savings equals expenses, right? But then, look, the reality is that the cost of living is just growing at an exponential rate. So our expenses, I mean, our purchasing power is just getting squeezed by the year. So how realistic is that formula in today's day and age? I mean, is that more of an ideal more than a reality?
I can understand where you're coming from, Han. I mean, today's cost of living can be high, yeah? But imagine this. If you're finding it difficult during your income earning years to put aside money, you know, how are you going to manage during your non-income earning years much later on? So at the end of the day, it's about priorities. Mm. So prioritizing savings would be essential. Otherwise, you pay the price later.
Right. Have you had much success in changing the mindsets of millennials out there when it comes to adhering to this formula, or at least gravitating towards the concept of delayed gratification?
I guess when a specific number is painted at the end of the day, I mean, quantifying the amounts that you need, that creates a little bit more of a sense of accountability and responsibility among millennials. Because if I were to go about and telling people, hey, you know, putting aside money for retirement is important, that's a bit vague, just like how Roshan painted it. But quantifying, hey, I mean, we calculate the needs. Okay, this is how much you need come retirement age. Based on your current contribution to EPF, this is where you're going to be. There's a huge gap. We need to do something, you know, making it real, making it realistic. I mean, making it visualizable for them. Gets them a little bit more motivated to save towards the needs.
Let me press that idea further then. Okay, earlier you mentioned the figure 160,000 to 1.2 million. That is quite the range when it comes to how much we need when we retire. What about now then? What is the rule of thumb that we need? How much should we either set aside to save or invest? Is there a ballpark figure that you can mention here? 5%, 10%, 20%?
There's various rules of thumb that's out there.
Many thumbs there.
Yeah. But essentially, by contribute, if you're an employee and you're contributing towards EPF, I mean, that's easily 11% put aside. But is that enough? I guess we just calculated. That's not going to be enough. Of course, the rule of thumb that you commonly hear is about putting aside at least 10% of your monthly income for savings.
Excluding EPF.
Excluding EPF. Well, that would be at least the minimum. Yeah, the need could be more if even by putting aside, if let's assume that 10% is not quite meeting your needs, then that amount needs to be adjusted. So it's quite subjective from an individual to another.
Right. So let's say you talked about EPF just now. So let's say I don't trust myself to put that aside, to give that extra 10%. Should I then voluntarily contribute that extra 10% to EPF?
Well, yeah, that's an option these days, right? I mean, the voluntary contribution is there. In terms of where it can go into, it could be EPF. It could be a voluntary scheme that was also launched not too long ago, PRS, Private Retirement Scheme. There are various options out there. Yeah, I mean, there's no one particular or specific asset or product that is best.
So all of this, right, savings, income, expenses, it's all part of cash flow. But another big part of cash flow is debt. And now we've all got this idea that debt is a bad thing, or at least it's become the new boogeyman. Debt here, cut the debt there. But debt isn't a bad thing. If used right, if managed well, it could be very productive. I mean, could you imagine buying a car with cash, let alone a house? So I guess it comes down to, again, the key word being managing it well. What key points or advice do you have with regards to debt management?
I mean, you've got a point over there, Roshan. I mean, to buy a vehicle, to buy a property these days, you can't do that, I mean, at least for the most of us, without using debt. And commonly you hear about this thing about good debt and bad debts, yeah? So that's where I guess the balancing point needs to be. Having more of good debts would make sense. You can't run away from bad debts, right? You for most of us in Malaysia, you still need a vehicle. I mean, I'm not calling it a bad debt, but it's a need these days, right? I guess then it boils down to keeping things in check, yeah? Keeping things at a manageable level. I mean, leverage is good, but do not forget there could be points at which your property, your investment property, may not be tenanted, and you could be having that additional cash flow that needs to be put into the property as well. So it's about the balancing effect, if you ask me.
So again, good debt being taking a loan to buy a house, bad debt taking a loan to go on holiday.
Bad debt as in putting it as bad debt is...
Non-productive,
non-income producing. That's a better way
of putting it. Like going on vacation.
Or personal loans.
Some would say, hey, I need a recharge. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not income generating though. Should you really be taking a loan to go on a holiday?
Cars aren't income generating, but they're essential to get to work, right?
Precisely.
So they do provide some form of economic benefit at the end of the day.
That's right. That's right.
I think what typical bad debt is credit cards.
Precisely. Yeah. Spending your future money in advance. I guess that will be the key culprit. And these days, you get calls every now and then from banks and outsource agencies. Unless, and of course, one has a discipline, it's difficult to keep away from bad debts.
Yeah, because I remember my cousin got 7 credit cards in the mail one day. And he's like, I don't want any of these. But it's like, no, just in case, you may want to use it. But he just cut all of them. He kept the one he wanted and cut the rest.
Right.
That's discipline, really.
Yeah, I guess a discipline and delayed gratification as well, and not spending beyond your means. Okay, so with the little time that we have left, what are your 3 key starting points when it comes to millennials preparing themselves for retirement?
Well, I don't know if I have 3, but
How many do you have?
I'll just go with the flow.
Okay.
Yeah. First key point that I would probably advise on is awareness. Yeah. Awareness can be a lot of things, but I think one thing that you can attribute it towards too is about quantifying your needs. Have a roadmap. Yeah. Upon understanding your needs, you can sit down and discuss with a financial planner or any of the financial professionals out there, because that will be a sense of motivation. Yeah. Otherwise, I would say investing blindly can derail you after a while as well. Key message number 1, awareness. Number 2, getting started. Yeah, getting started. As I mentioned just now, even at 9% growth, 8% growth, it still takes about 9 years for you to double up your money. All right. So essentially, one has 2 to 3 9-year cycles before you hit the retirement age, especially if you're in your 20s or 30s. Yeah. So starting somewhere is very important. It doesn't matter whether if you are starting at the right amount, but start somewhere. Yeah. The third one I will probably advise on would be you need to review your needs from time to time. Starting off somewhere is important, but sometimes you don't get things always right. So keeping things in check, making the necessary changes is important, and a regular review would be essential.
So basically, take out that yellow legal pad, write down what you think you need right now, take whatever you can get from there, just get started, and review as you go along.
Precisely.
Roshan, what kind of millennial are you? What yellow pad? Oh, it's on the phone now. Wait.
Trying to make it more real, hon. When you write it down, you can see it.
Yeah. Now, when you say regular check-ins, though, is this what, once a year, once every couple of years? How regular is regular?
Ideally, at least once a year. I mean, if it involves investments, ideally we talk about reviewing your investments every 6 months at least. I mean, just to keep things in check, how are your funds doing, how are your investments doing. But in terms of overall planning assessment, I think once a year would at least keep you in check. I mean, remind you of the gap that you still have, and lets you prioritize that bonus that comes in as well.
Now, Fazrul, I'm going to put you on the spot here, okay? Because you mentioned that they should perhaps try and check in with a financial planner, but you guys cost money, lah. So for millennials listening out there, are there any free ways we can do these financial check-ins?
That's a very good question there, Han. I mean,
It undermines your position a little bit right now, but help us out here.
Now, contrary to popular belief, not all financial planners charge a fee. Yeah, there are people who charge a fee. That's the one that you just mentioned. Some people who work on a hybrid mode charge a fee and get compensated through fees and commissions as well. And there are those who do not even charge a fee. They get compensated at a later point as well. Yeah. Now, it's about finding the right professional for you. Yeah. It's like how I shopped for a interior designer for my house that I just moved into as well. You know, there's the one who charges you a hefty amount, and there's the one who actually works on a dual mode as well. So finding the right professional, go and shop for them. Yeah, speak to a few people, get the chemistry in place, and whomever that fits your requirement and your bill, go with them.
So this is where the yellow legal pad comes out again, right?
Or just Google. All right. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. That was Fazrul Farooq, financial planner with IMAX Financial. Now you can catch Fazrul on the Roommate series, available now on the BFM Facebook page. That's facebook.com/BFM Radio. Don't forget that a new episode will be uploaded every Wednesday. I'm Tan Chung Han, with me Roshan Kanesan. Thank you so much for tuning in, and stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, Enterprise, right here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.